Good morning. Welcome to all of you, and we're going to take a slight variation from the agenda, and we're going to have Representative Regent Rick Beeson start off with his comments this morning, and then after he's done, we'll get into the part of the agenda with we'll go back to the agenda format. With that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, members of the Council. I appreciate the opportunity to speak in front of you today and have a conversation about the needs of the Board of Regents going forward. I was elected in 2009, and some of you were members of the Council then, so it's good to see a couple of familiar faces. By day, I'm a community banker and president of Park Midway Bank here in St. Paul. Been there for 25 years. Also, I've had public sector experience for 10 years before that, and been on a host of other boards and community involvements preceding my election. I was elected from the 4th Congressional District in the same election cycle that the legislature elected Regents Patricia Simmons, Clyde Allen, and John Frobenius, all of whom were elected for their second term at that time. Their service in my first term expires in 2015. I'd like to leave time for some questions, but do have some comments and thoughts that hope they'll add some value to your deliberations today. And I'm available individually if you want to call me through Sally. I can give you my contact information. I'd certainly be glad to talk with you as a follow-up. A couple of sort of general comments that I'll make this morning and break it into two categories. First would be just the general reaffirmation of the basic prerequisites for this position. The criteria that are outlined in the description, I think, are correct and comprehensive. A couple of characteristics that strike me as being particularly important, and I say this after being now on the board for about 4 years, so a little bit of experience under my belt, and that is, I think the most effective regents tend to be those who bring the most substantial life and leadership experience in dealing with people and organizational issues. It's probably not a surprise to hear that. But I do think it has to be mentioned. This is not a training job, as you know, and for myself, I've had to draw on all my life and work and volunteer experience to help me make the best judgments I'm capable of making. So I'm a better, for however good or poor I am, I'm certainly a better regent than I would have been at a different time in my life. I would also seek people with strong energy and drive to help make our great university even better. This combination of sort of life experience and energy is really are really linked. One without the other does no good in this position. This position is not a rewards job. The day that the legislature elects you is the work begins, and there's a lot of volume. There's a lot of reading. There's a lot of mental energy it takes, and just you have to have the stamina to be able to make a difference. Second category of general of needs revolve around really our current board composition, and let me talk about that. I think we have a high functioning board at present. We've got a wide range of styles and approaches, and a streak of independence among all 12 members. We approach issues from different perspectives and may disagree on individual issues. However, we've been able to work toward a single voice. That's critical for our president, who is our primary internal and external spokesperson. We have an ability right now, we haven't always had it, but we have an ability right now to what I call recover from disagreement. So I think that reflects a certain maturity of the board where we do disagree on issues, but we're able to move on immediately after that, and we don't sort of fall into predictable coalitions or voting blocks on issues. People or the disagreements, when we have them, are very situational, and I think that's healthy. it points toward consensus as being a primary governance goal. As you know, we do have a diversity need with our two regions of color. They also represent two of the five women on the board. They're leaving in 2013. We also, in my opinion, have an upcoming knowledge gap in the healthcare management area. All three retiring regions, again, I'm telescoping here 2 years out, but time will go fast. Regions Simmons, Frobenius, and Allen either have direct healthcare management experience or and or they've had substantial board committee experience on the board dealing with our academic health center. And that's our academic health center comprises over a third of our entire enterprise and includes our relationship with Fairview. It includes the medical school. It includes a substantial portion of our research that comes out of the medical school, as well as the allied health with veterinary care. It's an area that's going to see the most change, in my opinion, of any of any of the rest of the enterprise. In addition, we're going to need expertise in finance and business operations. In Regents Frobenius and Allen have the most large organizational management experience on the board, and I think that's important as we continue to develop new and complex financial models that drive cost controls, debt management, investments, budgeting, other metrics and measurements. So the board needs expertise to assess the administration's plans and performance. So we don't need to be at the skill level our staff is at, but we need people who are able to understand these models and these plans that are being forward and in which we are right now in the middle with the new president and so, again, my opinion is that we're going to need some expertise in that area. And then simultaneously, I think we've got a potential leadership gap as those three people. I don't want to over-focus on those three because we've got really capable current members, but we are a young board. We don't have a lot of tenure on the board. The three that are leaving are also have 36 years of experience, two presidential transitions, worked at three administrations. Two of the three have been chairs of the board. And in 2 years, we'll have them departing. We are a chair-centric board and have characteristics of a public corporation, which is really a lot of the power, a lot of the knowledge, and the communication which the president relies on is through the chair. So we're really heavily tilted that way. So as you look at recommending candidates, I would ask you to, you know, forward people that are able, willing and able to do step into leadership earlier as soon as possible because we may have that need going forward. So those are some random thoughts. I appreciate, again, being invited and stand for questions from the committee.
Thank you. Some of us are so used to thinking about immediate concerns, I appreciate the perspective of looking out a couple of years. Are there any questions?
Any particular style issues that President Kaler brings that would be different than Brunix or Rudolph or Passimol, you know, that, because if you have a chair-centric board, I agree with you. People are going to have to step up pretty fast to be leaders. What type of chair does Kaler work best with, or would he?
Well, thank you for the question, Margaret. He's able to work. First of all, he's able to work with a pretty wide range of people and styles, and he's strong in that area, the interpersonal side. He is analytical, and he's decisive. Brings that engineering side. So he likes decisiveness and clarity, and he likes to make decisions. But he's so well rounded and developed that that I think he could work with any number of styles. He does protect his area, his position. He holds his position and, you know, expects the board to respect the boundaries, the governance boundaries, and you talked about that. He'll protect himself on that and not let a strong chair sort of overwhelm him, and which is what we like to see.
Yeah, Jim, and then
Regent Beeson. You, in talking long term, you told us to think about the health care or the health component. We appreciate that. You also mentioned organizational experience, another trait. What about the trait of let's say, legislative relationships and knowing the legislature? Is that so? If there were three. If those are three different sets of traits, somebody an expert or knew a lot about healthcare, as you indicated, we might be losing some of that expertise. Then another expertise would be just general management experience and organizational, big organizational expertise. And then the third one might be, I don't know, described as more political, but perhaps more relationship oriented to the all government branches. I'm sure you'd say that the perfect candidate would have all three, but could you contrast what we might be looking for or where the board might be missing some of that?
Yeah, thank you. For any candidate to survive the election process, they do develop a certain expertise, familiarity. I think the key skills are really you'll expect them to be politically astute, but not necessarily partisan, and I really separate those out. We want people that are astute politically. The new administration's asking the board to take a greater role at the legislature, which we want, and he has to build trust the regents with giving the same message that he's giving. But I think you'll see for this year there'll be a different sort of rollout, a different communication plan that will involve the regents. And I think, so we want to come back to the legislature. They are who elected us, and we want to be able to talk with them about our observations, which are separate but related to the message universities giving. And I think for the chair, especially the chair of the board, will play, is who will and needs to have those visits with the leadership of the legislature and do some speaking here. I think we've got capability in that area, but we just have not been utilized very much. And again, it's a matter of difference in style that I think you're going to see between this president and the predecessor.
Regent Beeson, you mentioned diversity needs, and I'm wondering how far that extends to every person who is a regent or every candidate we interview in terms of their sensitivity to diversity needs and their creativity in trying to figure out what the university can be doing, going beyond being a member of a diverse group.
Thank you. It's something that it's critical that we're sensitive to it in terms of it comes at us in different ways, but at all times in terms of admissions, the composition of the class, the undergraduate class. It comes to us right now in hiring faculty and staff. I think we struggle with diversity a lot there, and we've added a lot of international students, but we, like all institutions of higher learning, we struggle getting certain classes of people into the university, either working or going to school. So it's really a priority. We're just now hiring the Vice President for Diversity and Equity, who will report directly to the President. That hire has just been announced. That's a key hire So it's our outreach program has got that as a centerpiece, so it's on our mind at all times.
Harriet.
Regent Beeson, first of all, thank you so much for coming today. You've provided a wealth of information already that's going to be so helpful in this process for us. I'd like to step back just a moment to what you mentioned around financial modeling and the financial financial expertise that we could enhance among the board. Can you speak to that in a little more depth in terms of how you would define complex financial models?
Yes. So what we started several initiatives last year. One was really looking at a long-term financial model. One was looking at our cost drivers and the opportunities to save money on, you know, on the expense side, debt management, investment area. Each one of these has, in a couple of those cases, we've got actually separate committees that include citizens, not just board people. But we've started some really important financial steps that haven't been. That haven't been as open and as sort of inclusive as we do right now, and so we've taken those up with the president. The president's really engaged in those, but this is about execution of those. Where do we? We've got hundreds of cost savings things going on, but you know, how do we track where those? You know, how well that's done. And they're not simple. These are not simple. Some cases, these are. We just approved $60 million in new software for financial management and personnel management. The software. I mean, it's an unending sort of investment going on in our back room, and some of that needs to give us better data. So we're spending more time than we have been on sort of. Implementing these financial matters, and not everything's about money, but often everything does come down to money because money creates choices and savings create investment. You know, ways to lower costs or opportunities to reinvest elsewhere.
So the level of expertise you're looking for really would be someone that. Might have comparable skills to a CFO of a large organization then?
I think somebody that's dealt with numbers and with the, you know, with large organizations is, and I come from a small bank. I'm president, my bank's relatively small, so even though I was familiar with all the material, it's different than, you know, dealing with such a large organization.
Okay. Thank you.
Regent Beeson, to what extent does the board work with the international relations of the school, thinking in terms of the university being the economic driver of the state, its research components, and its technology commercialization components, and then the front page of the business section being emerging markets. What needs do you see vis-a-vis the board in grasping what the international environment is and how the university should function in its cost centers and academically in that international environment?
Well, thank you for the question. The institution really is international. Looking at the composition of our students and our workforce, our research, our everything there, and there's strategic alliances everywhere. I'm shocked all the time about the, it's all about relationships. Where's our faculty creating relationships? We've got a big pipeline of students coming in from Turkey right now. We've got the most graduates of any university in the country out of China. These are pipelines for talent, and going forward, the competition for talent on the student and the faculty level is the demographics change. It's going to be the differentiator to our whether we can sustain our success and our excellence. And a lot of that will come internationally. A lot of it needs to come through improvements in the achievement gap here. The commercialization side and the work that we're doing in research knows no boundaries at all. It's all really international, and the market is we're selling intellectual property, working with universities around the world, and selling those products, developing those products worldwide. I think we want to we're a national university, and want to have that sort of platform. We want to be seen as the international focal point for the state. You know, economic development and education.
Regent Beeson, what is the budget at the University of Minnesota today? And the reason I ask you that question, I think that's after we look at the student position, all the other positions, we have to put that number up in our mind and say, does this person have expertise, leadership, and governance ability to run a what size of enterprise?
$3.5 billion. And that's with, you know, there are somebody's characterized this as a business enterprise that's really a loose confederation of hundreds and hundreds of small businesses, and it has characteristics of a large corporation, but it's extremely decentralized. We have the shared governance with faculty. We have a public purpose. So it's very different than a large corporation, but it is a big business. And for the board to really sort of be able to come back to the legislature and to our stakeholders and say, we're managing your costs. And I don't try to over-focus on costs. I think that's sort of single-dimensional with everything else, all the other things we're trying to do there. But it is a very, very large business, and we're trying to create systems and asking the administration to give us the data so we know that they know that these we're getting the best use out of public money and donor money.
I have a question that regarding particularly the student region. This is a unique opportunity for our council to recommend a student position. Is there anything, you've talked a lot about other region positions, but is there anything specific for the student position that we should be looking for?
Yes, and they're treated as a full voting member. They're same expectations. We've been served, in my opinion, exceptionally well by Regent Ramirez, who brought a lot of maturity and some life experience and input. I think there's a tendency to think, well, they're going to bring the students' perspective. We're looking for that, but we also want them, expect them to participate in all of the discussions. They're at all the committee meetings. There's nothing sort of isolated about that position. They are they're likely not to be a chair of the board, but they will in their later years chair a committee, and so and I think that's healthy. They they want that and they benefit from that, we benefit from that. We have student regents who are attendees at our committee meetings who don't vote, and that's a different, that's a, you know, that's more of a learning experience, more of an observation experience.
Mr. Chair?
Oh, yes.
In that regard, the student regents, of whom there are several, correct?
Yes.
Do have full voice. Is that accurate?
They're able to participate at the committee level. They don't vote, and they don't participate in full board meetings. But they'll plan, they'll have meetings with staff, they'll have follow-up meetings after the board meetings, and what do we learn, what are we seeing,
And they are specifically charged in their representative capacities with carrying the student voice forward.
Yes, I think that's a good point. They're geographically and sort of tenure-wise, they're going to represent their constituencies, and they're expected to bring the voice of the students. They'll come and speak as a group to the full board once or twice a year and give a report on how their year went and what their view is, so that's a help. So going back to the elected student regent, even though it has that designation, we want the best person possible there because they're going to have full responsibility as we do.
Just to follow up to that, Regent Beeson, have you found that the student regent and liaison representatives all have nurtured contacts with student groups, student organizations, bringing their thoughts back to the regents and sharing that information? Do they network?
They do network. There is communication. The elected student regent will get calls more often than I would from those stakeholders. It's good. It does create good communication. Having all those folks there. It's after we're elected, we're reminded, even though I'm elected from St. Paul, I'm now representing the whole state, and the same with the student regent. They're not representing the students. The moment they take the oath, they're representing the people of the state of Minnesota. And for those of us that are geographically elected, and that's 8 of the 12 of us have districts, it's really not about the congressional district anymore. It's about just serving the whole institution.
With that, Jerry?
One other question. I'm intrigued about your perspective or comments about, you mentioned things about, recruiting, internationally for students and faculty and being a part of the whole world economy. How does that fit together with kind of the mission to provide an education to the citizens of the state?
Well, we're doing so many things. There's so much going on over there, and none of these are mutually exclusive. We're always going to be, our primary mission is always going to be educating the young people of Minnesota, and that shows up in our undergraduate composition. But it's going to be, the search for talent gets really acute going forward, and we're not going to lower our standards for admission. Minnesota students are going to need to bring their game up as we go forward, and and more on the graduate and the PhD side, the people that have the skills in science, technology, engineering, and math are really international. We're not graduating enough students that have those sort of orientations, our graduate school composition is more international. A lot of those students go right into research. Some go into teaching. They either go into teaching or research, and in research, we're among the top 7 public research institutions in the country, and that takes a lot of great talent to do that. And so we want to make as much opportunity available to Minnesota students, pathways, and for success. But we do live in a world economy, as you mentioned. Thank you,
Bert. And then we'll wrap up.
Okay. Could you, Richard Beeson, could you talk a little bit about the balance between teaching, research, outreach, and administration in terms of funding? And it's important that a faculty member, published or perished, does teaching fall behind in that regard? And are we spending a lot of money on administration rather than teaching or outreach? Could you just address that issue a little bit?
Well, some of the, that's sort of the black box of, what do faculty do? I think the administration would they're trying to, there are faculty who are really good at teaching and want to teach, their faculty that really want to do research, and their faculty that are sort of naturally inclined to do outreach. So the provost and the departments try to put people toward their highest and best use. Everybody does research. Every teacher does research. Everybody is in search of, wants to be as strong as they can in their area of expertise. A lot of our colleges are privately, they're basically private business models. So Carlson School, the law school, those deans are raising money, supplementing tuition, but they get no public money. So they're talking to their faculty about the faculty need to support themselves with research grants. And that's the model. So the days of having a college professor in a tweed suit and a bow tie, a little bit of that, but not most everybody has to raise their own dollars to fund their lab and their staff people. The administration cost side, and this is a very big part of what we're doing right now. We're trying to define what is administration cost. So I'm going back to your question about, is a supervisor an administrator? Maybe, maybe not. We know a senior administrator is an administrator, but we now have started the process of defining administrative costs and benchmarking against ourselves. That's not been done. And people say, well, why don't you compare yourself against other institutions? The problem is that those models are, the data entry that goes in around the country are very different, and you can't compare yourself against any of our large peer groups. So we decided we will measure ourselves against our own performance as a benchmark internally. So going forward, we'll be able to tell how much we've reduced administrative costs. Very important. It's the first time, it may be the first time a big university has done this. I'm really proud of that initiative.
Thank you.
Very good. Regent Beeson, thank you very much.
Thank you.
For your comments.
Thanks, folks.
Thanks.
With that, we'll get back to our published agenda, our stated agenda. I was remiss in not welcoming everyone here this morning. Thank you all for coming. December 7th being a day that hit some of our families hard with the memorial or the anniversary of the World War II attack on Pearl Harbor. So, I'd like to remember that this morning as well. Also the beginning of many holiday seasons today. With that, we will get on with the agenda to look at the minutes from the December 11th and the August 12th meeting. I think the reason we have both of them is in August we did not have a quorum, so we couldn't officially conduct business. Today we do have a quorum. We are still short of members. We are short some members who haven't been appointed or reappointed. Hoping that by January that may change, but it may not. So we may be a few members short of our allowed membership going into our January cycle as well. So with that, is there any discussion, or I would accept a motion for the December 11th, 2011 minutes?
So moved.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. Moving on to the August 10th minutes.
move.
Sonia?
Second.
By Dan. All in any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries. In the moving on to item three, in the packet is a request to change some procedural rules. And to paraphrase this, with open meeting changes, the exec committee as a standing committee of the council is almost made not to function outside of an official meeting capacity. So we would like to remove the exec committee as a standing committee. Sally, did I speak that? Okay. I think we just need a simple majority for this. But I would accept a motion to do we have a proposal before us, or
I'll move it.
Okay.
I think the procedure rules are in your packet, and the changes would be in red. I would understand that.
I think
correct.
I Dave?
Moved it, but we need a second.
Second.
Okay, I've got Jerry as a second.
And if you don't mind, I might just mention what the purpose of this is. We have a three-member executive committee, and under open meeting, we can't talk to one another outside of an open meeting. So I couldn't send an email to Harriet or to Pat as a vice chair of the organization, because the executive committee is a functioning committee of the board. This would change that, so at least we can have some administration capability in between meetings.
It's been a challenging couple months. Any further discussion? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. We're moving along quite nicely. This is we're probably going to be a little bit flexible this morning, there's possibly under the other section we've got one item we're going to talk at the end of the day about our voting procedures that we will use in January. So we're going to save that discussion until after we've voted today, so that we don't have any confusion about which voting method we're going to use. So today's voting is a little more straightforward. We've got one change is that Representative Pulowski is not able to join us today, and we are expecting Senator Bonoff a few minutes around 11:15. So we're going to have to be a little bit flexible with that. So we're probably going to be moving things around in the agenda. So I would like to ask Dave Fisher to start with the first committee report, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a report of the recruitment committee, and in your packet is actually a written report that summarizes the activities as I've come to see them. We've had on our committee myself, Sonia Carnes, Bert Swanson, Joanne Stately, and George Sundstrom. And George actually has driven down here a couple of times to participate, so thank you for that, George. And as the report indicates, we have done some significant canvassing to alert people of the openings in the current seats on the Board of Regents. This included letters to the editor in various newspapers. I can tell you that I don't think any of them were published by any of the newspapers that were there, although we had significant contact with reporters. We did provide information to 1,300 deans and student organizations at the University of Minnesota. I think the consequence of that is a fairly strong number of student applicants for the for today's consideration. We had the support of the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce and Minnesota Business Partnership, each of whom notified their own members concerning openings. We sent reminder calls to at least the two incumbents, Regents Cohen and Johnson, and reminding them of the deadline, assuming that they would like to reapply. And we did send letters to all sitting legislators and all new legislators newly elected in this last November election, asking for their advice and consultation and recommendations. I have made myself presentations to each of the advancement, this is the fundraising officers of the University of Minnesota, and the Minnesota-based U of M Alumni Association, as well as the International University of Minnesota Alumni Association, all of whom are quite supportive, asking for their recommendations as well, and giving them, by the way, the type of criteria we're looking for, not dissimilar to what Regent Beeson just spoke of. Not just the vacancies, of course, that we're facing currently, but the vacancies that we would be experiencing perhaps in another 2 years, to show that we need some bench strength and to get some recommendations around that. We did two press releases, as you probably had seen, one following our first council meeting and then another after the election, assuming that people would wait on making the application until they actually knew who it was that was going to be electing them, and that is the state legislature. And we have sent these to all media. When I say all, I think the list is at best comprehensive. And this is newspapers as well as online newsletters, publications targeting minority groups. All have gone out on at least two separate occasions, in addition to the letters of the editors that I mentioned earlier. And as always, as it comes down in this type of recruitment effort, individual calls have gone out, I'm sure, by everybody to people that we knew might be interested and might be qualified, and encouraging them to consider making application. I can assure you that I certainly have had my hand in making those comments to individuals as well. And in addition, we did send notifications to past applicants in 2007, 2009, and 2011, in suggesting that they might want to reconsider making an application for this year. That is the report of the recruitment committee, and I'd ask if any members of the recruitment committee had anything in addition to add. And excuse my voice, it's disappearing.
David, would you refresh our memory about maybe go to the last two cycles and see how many total candidates? It's different when you have at-large on one district. You know, it's not comparable, really, but just how many total applicants did we have, or maybe?
I actually can
refresh our memory.
I can actually do that. If I can remember where I put the piece of paper that had these written on. We had, in 2011, we had 47 applicants. This is 2 years ago. 2009, we had 31 applicants. In 2007, must be the water, we had 113 applicants. So we did one heck of a job there, and 36 of those 113 were from the 5th Congressional District alone. So one thing I'm going to be recommending, I think, going forward is that we really take a far more critical look at our recruitment efforts and try to determine how we can get the word out, because I don't think it's a lack of interest in being a member of the Board of Regents. It really is a lack of knowledge that there are positions open, and we need to find a way of making sure that's out.
David or Sally, do we have any idea of, and you maybe had alluded to it, how much response we got from the press release portion? I mean, we talk about it every year that the press release is an important thing. Do we have a way of tracking to see how much, if any, response we got from that?
I would say there was more contact made to the office after the letter to the editor in the start of the year.
It was interesting. I had one comment when I called a Park Rapids paper, they were willing to put it in, and they actually did. When I called the Detroit Lakes paper, they said, well, I think we've already published that, so it must have been from your interest. So some of them are getting published.
Okay.
from a tracking perspective, it might be possible to speak to the Minnesota Chamber or perchance even the legislative majorities who have clipping services that, you know, that they work with for their own efforts, to ask them if they would, subsequent to the sending out of those press releases, keep their eyes open and let us know what the
publication. No, that might be. And that is the report of the recruitment committee.
Thank you, Chair.
I'm sorry. Oh. One more. There are a very large number of applicants who are students, which I think is terrific news. How does that compare to other years? I mean, percentage-wise, roughly speaking, is there a larger percentage of students to non-students this year compared to others?
I don't happen to have that information.
Well, okay.
2007 was the year there was a lot of students. That was it like 70?
A lot of everything and a lot of students.
The majority of that was students.
Okay.
I can go back to before that and see, too.
Yeah, it might be interesting by this afternoon when we begin to talk about applicants to know roughly what that has been.
And I think that I have seen that the listings compiling that, so information is available. I just
okay.
To your
today. Good.
Thank you. One other question. We did something different this year in that we put in a fairly hard and firm deadline date that was later than usual in our process. Saying, well, let's just do it once and not have an extension. Is there any comment on if that was a successful strategy? Certainly with the general election this fall, maybe having an impact on that as well.
Fair to say, Mr. Chair, that in the past, within my recollection, the first deadline was pre-election, and so we always ended up doing another one after. And it is a process that is controlled by political lenses. So it really doesn't make any sense to have a deadline that's prior to
before
post-election.
The one disadvantage, we lost the newsworthiness of an extension.
Yes.
And I don't know whether that's a good thing to lose or not, but if we're talking about publicity, the sometimes newsworthy, whether it's good or bad, is newsworthy. But thank you to the recruitment committee. Lots of good candidates as I read through them. Maybe the quantity wasn't as large, but the quality seems. We'll get into that discussion this afternoon. Any final comments for the recruitment committee process?
One more. Is this an appropriate time, or would it be later when we discuss applicants, to discuss that one came in late after the deadline?
I think we'll do that right before lunch.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for bringing that up. Harriet, are you prepared for the
I am.
Next report?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We actually have compiled for you the selection criteria for candidates. We've basically taken the existing criteria and modified it slightly based on feedback from interviews with stakeholders. And I won't go through the list here of individuals that we've spoken with, but we have feedback from representative groups. The common theme across this was a need for a willingness to embrace and utilize technology for communication and to expedite to enhance the operational efficiency of the work that the board does. So we have added a number 11 into the personal qualifications section at the top, and that is the only addition that we have. I believe in listening to Regent Beeson this morning that we've captured inherently in the other qualifications that are listed here all of the things that he mentioned. Are there any questions? Thank you.
Harriet, I'm taking a moment to read.
Oh, so, thank you. So. Absolutely. Any questions?
Number 11 is the only addition from what we've traditionally done. And I notice Regent Beeson is in the audience texting, so we know that he meets that qualification.
Multitask.
Yeah. Yep. If I may, Mr. Chair, I withdraw it. I see it now. I should have brought my glasses. Sorry. I was going to comment that one of the things we keep in mind is making sure we have a mind open to diversity. And when I say diversity, not only ethnic and gender diversity, but also the talent diversity. I think it's captured in number 10 very nicely.
Is that to be recognized?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Had my head down.
Sure. Based on what I heard this morning, I'm also wondering the professional or experiential background, if something around complex or large enterprises within a global context should be articulated. I don't see that anywhere. This whole issue of being in the international sphere and in the economic context. So perhaps three with an addition of in the global context, in a national and global context.
Any discussion around that? I would support that.
I would support that.
Might that particular phrase even be added to number one? Maybe it's more appropriate when we're thinking about the university in both in the state and in a global context.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I think that's an accurate statement. Knowledge and experience relates to the needs of the board, the challenge, the opportunities facing the university. Is there a way to put it in the first one and simultaneously reflect that it kind of carries down so that we don't need to repeat it? I'm not ready to give you that language, but I think that might be doable if somebody else has the ability to do that.
Innovation in the state, comma, nation, comma, and world.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Margaret.
Facing the university as it and the challenges. Mr. Chair, should we carry the context of this discussion to the committee and ask that they finalize language that incorporates this discussion?
I think that's an excellent suggestion. Dave?
Well, I think that's an excellent suggestion, with the exception that we are going to have to use these criteria for our next selection process. So we're going to have those
an hour or two.
Known. And it's also something I think we have to pass as a council, because we make this report to the legislature.
In that case, Mr. Chair, I would move that the criteria selection committee meet over the noon hour and finalize this language for right prior to our, for presentation right prior to our action this afternoon.
I think that sounds like could be very acceptable. Is there a second? I think, did you move?
I moved it. I don't know if I have to, but I did move it.
Okay. Is there a moved and seconded? Is there a discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Then we will look forward to a
revised
report. Jim?
Mr. Chairman, these are all individual trait characteristics. Refresh my memory on where we look at the global diversity challenge and objectives we have with respect to the board as a whole.
Mr. Chair, to satisfy the needs of the board in number 10, does that not capture that?
It certainly addresses it. I'm wondering if it is the word simple, the word diversity, generally. I asked the question, and I want to raise it as a thought. I see it does address it. And I want to make sure that no one else feels that we need to address that in a little more global, if you will, board capacity.
Bill?
Yeah, it seems to me an individual is what an individual is. It's more up to this body collectively to determine whether that individual fits within to the aggregate as a component part to fulfill the greater diversity needs of the Board of Regents would be my thought on it. So it's more up to us than I don't think an individual can morph themselves for presentation to this group. So,
nor do we want them to. So,
right.
Yeah. Good discussion. Any other comments? Harriet, thank you. The rest of the committee, thank you as well. We are moving on to the interview process and questions. Lois?
We have a letter. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have a letter in the packet that will be sent to candidates, and it will have some modifications made to it. It's this one with date, time. Parking changes will be made depending on how many people we set ourselves up to interview. There may be a reference to an opportunity to extend the amount of minutes, but it will likely be very close to this range of 5 minutes for an opening statement, 45 minutes for Q&A. Following down, referencing the opening statements addresses some topics that they may want to cover. We expect to add a phrase that might touch on governance there. But that will be ultimately up to the chair to address. Context of sharing these pieces is there was a discussion about making some language changes. This document had been copied prior to that discussion, so that's why it's not reflected here. But those are the three points that were referenced. Addressing the parking, maybe or maybe not the minutes, and this, and then touching just a little bit phrase-wise on governance experience in the middle of paragraph number 2. The interview committee will then go forward. The second page opening statement guidelines has not been modified, and that is open for your review. The interview committee will go forward and meet on the 18th of December to review our past history of questions that have been available for all of us to utilize, take into consideration Mr. Beeson's presentation this morning and the guidance that he has provided, and communication that the various members of the committee have had with stakeholders. Prepare a revised document that will be shared with everyone for adoption prior to our actual interviewing in January.
update.
Mr. Chair, Lois, and I think we've all had this experience in the past, and I had a moment of deja vu looking over some of the applications that we had coming before us for today's consideration, that we have a number of people that are perfectly willing to tell us how good they are, but don't tell us what they did or have done. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be, I'm sure the letter is perfectly fine, but I'm wondering if it would be appropriate to emphasize very clearly to candidates that we really would like to hear how their own personal experiences relate to the position they're looking to fill. And that would be something more than just summary of their skill set, but rather what have they actually done in their life to demonstrate their ability to lead an organization like the University of Minnesota.
That is duly noted. And, relevant personal, professional, and experiential background is the number one point on page 2.
And I think that goes in the right direction. And to follow up on Dave's comment, maybe we need to just expound on that a little bit.
Okay.
Add a little to that. I like the direct question about how is this background going to help you lead. Sometimes making it incredibly obvious makes it easier.
Chair Duncanson, I would add lead a $3.3 billion higher education institution. They need to address this. It's not... I love the university. I'm passionate about it. That won't help you lead a $3.3 billion operation. And they really, this is not about fluff in their first five-minute statement.
That's good.
Sonia.
Chairman, I wonder also if we shouldn't go back to the characteristic number one under the personal characteristics and ask some kind of a question about their understanding of the role of the university with and its role within the state, nation, and globe. We talk about this huge organization. I think it would be a very difficult question to answer, but to get a sense of their sophistication in being able to think about being a member of this very important board that's trying to grow the university, grow and keep it healthy within this very large context. And you phrased the question, but I think something of that nature would be very useful.
Excellent. May I ask, Sonia, are you speaking in your point to bullets that should be part of the guidelines for the opening statement, or are you saying, as a committee compile the interview questions,
yes,
please be sure
the latter.
The latter.
The
okay.
Latter.
And are you speaking to the opening statement, Margaret, or to with the 3.3, or to interview questions?
You mean their 3 to 5 minute opening statement?
Right.
I think they should be addressing it there, and then we...
Yes.
Here's what I think we also need to let them know. We have read their background information.
Don't tell us again.
A lot of the... Don't tell... I mean, I'm being rather candid, but don't tell us again what's already on that.
Yes.
This needs to be a much tighter set of questions that really gets at the heart of who should be selected to go on.
Very definitely in the Q&A guidance that we will share with you.
But also in their opening statement.
And we can modify the opening paragraph. So in light of the fact that this second page will go out before we again meet, Mr. Chair, might I ask if the interview committee can meet over the noon hour as well and bring back a second page here that can have some of these points incorporated into it.
We may need a longer lunch hour.
Yes. We're good.
How much overlap is there between the two committees? Just
I think one person.
Just two.
No, two. Okay.
Two.
But we have one phrase to grapple with in one, and then we can can flip to the other.
Well, sometimes this large a group to get into creative composition is not effective.
Right. Okay.
Jim?
Mr. Chair, with regard to this, a letter, I think the letter is straightforward and it gives them some advice. But as I recall the last process, we have some people went off the tracks and maybe hadn't read the letter, or it's hard to read a letter. I'm the chairman of the orientation committee, and traditionally, I think, at least last year or 2 years ago, the orientation committee met after the second screen. I mean, we do a screen today, and then we do a screen on the week of the 7th. I'm wondering, and I'd be willing to, the time is a little tight, but these letters will go out sometime soon?
Next week, I guess.
Would the committee think it would be worthwhile to for the orientation committee to add a step to the people that get this letter and ask them to come in and do a discussion about a training session for their interview, or is that too much? I mean, is that should we just let them read the letter and show up and take their own case, or do you think it would be helpful if we had invited them to a meeting and talked about that? We could ask at least a couple former regents or current regents to talk about the process too. Do you think, is that premature, or is that, would that be helpful?
Mr. Chair, go ahead.
We'll see what reaction we get, Paul.
Thank you, Chair. Distinguished colleague Erickson, I think that's a bad idea. I think that everybody should be given an opportunity to read the best letter that we can communicate and think about it and proceed accordingly.
I'm fine. I wanted to lay it on the table because we were struggling with the message that they get, and you're right, we can test. That can be a test. How well did you read the letter and respond to it, as opposed to tutoring that we might give? I'm happy to not do it, but I wanted to say it's a possibility too. We haven't done it before.
Terry,
I guess my concern is I thought I heard you say give them the opportunity to do that, but I think candidates would assume that's an obligation.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
One thing that I think I've seen happen as far as practice, and maybe it's just been the practice that I've done, but after we finish voting today, we are going to assign one of us to personally call each of the candidates that is going to be invited for an interview. Mm-hmm. So many of us will have one, or maybe some of us will have two people that we are going to personally contact. In the past, when I've done that with specific individuals, I have made myself available to be their contact, so to speak, so that if they have questions or comments or concerns with any of the process, that I'm available as a phone call.
In the Boy Scouts, that's the buddy system.
Okay. Well, I'm not so sure it isn't the same buddy system with the RTAC.
I think that's entirely... I wasn't suggesting as raising the question whether we thought it was a good idea.
I actually wanted to somewhat make the... It may be somewhat redundant, but mm-hmm. we do have new members here, so I wanted to make sure. Bill?
I see the letter. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Reference, if you have questions, give Sally Olson a call. I don't know if that's appeared previously and or whether you receive calls in response to that and how that process goes.
Well, generally, I call them to set up the interviews anyway, so it's pretty... They'll be back and forth in questions.
So the date and time is never a surprise that's on the letter. That's usually prearranged.
And it's been confirmed. Like, after a member calls and congratulates them and notifies they've been selected for an interview, then Kyle will call them after and kind of go over the process.
Has the process in the past that someone spoke over the five-minute limit? I don't know what you were speaking about when you said problems in the past?
I didn't by problem, but it was an inarticulate word. I just suggest that they all had a different style, and as we sat around the table, sometimes that style, I can think of a couple instances in my last cycle where the style, if not the substance in addressing it, was, I wouldn't call it a problem, it was just different.
Okay. Yes.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Margaret, I think another piece that had been called into question in terms of a candidate's full understanding of the process really is the piece that happens at the legislature, lobbying for the role. I think that in the past, if someone has missed an orientation session or has not grasped the full knowledge of the process, there has been some confusion over how the process works prior to the vote. So I think that's another piece.
Any more comments? I think we're finishing up Lois's committee report.
Correct. And at this point, we will meet immediately following Harriet's selection committee's sentence modification and make a few changes to the opening statement, page 2 of this letter, and likely add the governance language on the first page of the letter.
Thank you. And I'm not sure if we recognized who else was on the committee with you.
I will do my best. We have Jennifer. We have Dan Walter. We have Harriet. We have Paul Taylor.
Good. Thank you all. And thanks to the previous committee members as well. I think we've recognized. David, Harriet, did you recognize?
I did not. Paul, Lois, and Kathy Madsen.
Thank you. Jim, do you have comments for us for the orientation?
The orientation, my job doesn't start until after the week of January 7th, and we had a successful orientation meeting. I think almost all the candidates were able to come. I don't think it was 100%, but I think they thought it was an obligation. they were benefited by it. We bring in regents and the chairs of the committees, and they speak to their perception of the process, at least one regent talks about, gives them advice about how to go through it. So we will have that meeting. I forget that. What is the? We will have that decision in the week of the 7th, and we have to report by the 15th. When do we have to?
Recommendation.
Excuse me. Then they have to. What's the time frame for the legislature then?
The joint committee has to meet by February
28th. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I will hold that. We will hold that meeting. Our committee will hold that meeting and allow everyone to come and listen. And it was a lively discussion, and I think so. We will have that meeting.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. In conversation in one of the committee discussions here, it was brought up a little bit about lobbying, and certainly our membership is. This is a public meeting, and we are. We don't necessarily encourage candidates to lobby us outside of the process that we have. So I just wanted to. It hasn't been a problem in the past, but it's one of the traditions that our group has had. But yet we are an open body and an open meeting, and membership is public. So candidates certainly aren't prohibited from it, but it hasn't been a practice. No hidden agenda on my part by just bringing out something. We are. That concludes our committee reports. Thank you all, we are hoping to have Senator Bonner address us, and it's about the scheduled time that he's supposed to be here.
She. She's my legislator.
She's coming from Chaska, so from a member orientation out there, so I just got an email. So I want to be great in one of those times.
Okay. Well, why don't we take a 10-minute recess take a quick break, and if one of the committees would like to have maybe one of their first meetings. But let's try to keep moving along, and hopefully the senator will be with us in a few minutes. So why don't we try to reconvene at
approximately 11:25.
Go out and make a call.
We'll reconvene. With that, there has been a handout that Harriet's committee, the selection criteria committee, has met and made some changes. Sally was quick to republish or reprint the changes in red. So, Harriet?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What we have added to number one is in red. To number 10, we've also added, we've removed the word and added the phrase and international awareness at the end. And then under professional and experiential, number 3, we have included language that states operating in a national and global context. Thanks to Margaret.
Excellent.
No, thanks. You brought it up. I wordsmithed.
Me and Margaret.
Well, remind me next time we do this that I really want the wordsmithing on my committee. So thank you very much for your assistance.
Very good.
And thanks to the committee for the very fast, quick, good work.
Lois?
Nope.
You're still writing.
I only have half a sentence left, so I think I can maybe state that. Thank you to the committee. This is the letter. You can see where the red is in the letter. And that language says, the subsequent portion of the interview will be a wide-ranging question and answer format, with all questions focused on governance, board practice, and the nature of a public body, the mission and potential impact of the University of Minnesota, and leadership that can advance the plans, policies, and operations of the institution for the benefit of the state.
Do we have a copy of that somewhere? Or?
Yes, that was good. This one.
Oh, okay. I just thought we were supposed to be looking at it.
Yes.
The answer is no.
Oh, okay.
You have the old letter,
okay.
And the red is what the language, the modified language would be. So previously the language referenced the questions will all pertain to the plans, policies, and operations of the university. So we went beyond that to say that the questions will focus on governance, board practice, and the nature of a public body, the mission and potential impact of the university, and leadership that can advance the plans, policies, and operations of the university. So it kept the plans, policies, and operations of the university that were included in the letter that was used 2 years ago, added governance board, added public body, added mission and impact of the university.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Madam Committee Chair, I've never met a document that I didn't want to proofread at least a dozen times. So let me suggest in that last sentence that starts with the council will wish to, how your qualifications, background, and specific experiences demonstrate that ability.
Sounds good.
In my travels, I think all three qualifications, background, and experiences are important.
So you are deleting make a significant difference for the continued success of the university?
No. The last, and how your qualifications, comma, cross out the end, background, and specific experiences demonstrate that ability.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for that, Sally. Does Margaret have one now?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Then this part is not in red ink anywhere yet. And it goes to the second page, which has the opening statement guideline. And it inserts in the opening paragraph. It's a long first sentence that ends in the third line, member of the Board of Regents, period. New language. This is your opportunity to share information that goes beyond what you referenced in your application. Please elaborate how your personal slash professional experience demonstrates your ability to lead this large, multifaceted, financially complex organization that serves the state public good and operates in a national and international context. Paragraph down. Sentence for your reference. I simply wanted to say, for your reference, here's nine areas to think about when you do this. And that sentence isn't what's written yet. Because some of these items, 1 through 9, as they stand, are duplicative of what's in their application.
Right.
And so I didn't want to say, be sure you touch on these nine, or we would be, you know, taking back the words we just used right above. So we need a sentence that just says, for your reference, here's some areas to think about. And that's our suggested changes.
And the other thing that I'll mention is kind of an obvious change is that we'll update the signatures to be the current chair and co-chairs.
Right. The letter that you have in front of you with the red in it is what was emailed post having been already modified, and so that's why it looked like this.
And I was actually saying it for the benefit of my co-chairs, so they realized they were going to be signing this. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, I'll read chairs. It then.
Yeah. Oh, Dave.
I don't want any surprises. So. Thank you. I will ask, could you just reread that?
The second page opening?
Yeah, I don't have any comments, but okay. I'd just like to hear it a second time.
This is your opportunity to share information that goes beyond what you referenced in your application, period. Please elaborate on how your personal slash professional experience demonstrates your ability to lead this large, multifaceted, financially complex organization that serves the state public good and operates in a national and international context.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for your good assistance and patience.
Any more comments on the committee reports?
Very good.
We do have one other item that we did want to discuss before lunch, as well as hearing comments from the senator this morning. Welcome, thank you. And as you're preparing, we'll give you just a moment here, and we'll take up our other item of business. And that is, we did have an application that came in after the deadline, and we just need to have a discussion or consensus about what we want to do with that application. Dave, do you have any comments as chair of the recruitment committee? There were some circumstances that were involved with maybe why the application was late.
I am familiar with the applicant. Her name is Peggy
Lucas.
We can say that, can't we? Peggy Lucas. I don't know what we can say or not say. But I understand that she had been misinformed as to the deadline date and had been intending to apply, and when she learned that the date had already passed quickly, and I think it's apparent from her handwritten application, she quickly put this together and submitted it. And the recruitment committee has not passed on this particular application, but it was my suggestion that we bring the application to the full body to determine whether we would accept it even though it was past the deadline.
Harriet?
My question would be, were we responsible for the communication of the wrong date?
Actually, my understanding is that it was information that she received from the Alumni Association rather than from our organization.
Well, Mary Kay Delvo is here from the Alumni Association, so would you allow her to answer?
It's fine with me if she has a comment relevant.
Relevant to the date?
The deadline.
The deadline, we attach the news release within our web materials, so all the deadlines were consistent with
what was in the news release.
My understanding is that it was a combination of her not hearing the deadline, which may be that she didn't receive it. She also was traveling out of the country during November. And I think according to a note perhaps that we all had surgery and suddenly realized that the deadline had passed and attempted to communicate with the office to find out if she could put it in. And Dave's suggestion was that she prepare the material and get it here so that we as a body could decide what to do. I'm not certain what we should do, but when I saw the application, my reaction was we have fewer applications than we have had at least some other years, and it's a strong candidate, a female, when we have, I think, less than 20% of the candidates this year are female. And there's one other issue that I don't know is relevant, but I'm going to say it anyway. Peggy is Asian American. She never lists it as a consideration because she just hasn't. But I think this isn't the time that we're talking about her in particular, but I want to just paint a picture of, I would think, a strong potential candidate, and I wonder what we therefore should do with the fact that it's a late application.
I would like to, Joanne.
I'd like to make a motion.
Well, yeah. Okay.
I move that we do not accept this late application. It's public information. It has been out there. It has been communicated through the papers and other various feeds of communication. There is always going to be circumstances when people, for their own personal reasons, may miss a deadline. We do have a very good slate of candidates before us. So that's my motion.
Second. It's been moved and seconded to deny this application or to not accept it, excuse me.
Sure.
One other.
I'm going to defer
sure. Oh, yeah.
To the second.
One comment I'd have is in my case, actually, we received this electronically. And it was sent actually after I had left home to come to this meeting. And so, you know, the other things that I'm sure most of us review those sometime before that. So the first chance you have to look at this is just with not much time to even review it. So, and also a little difficult to be able to read this on my iPhone.
Good point.
Chair, board members, I support the resolution also. I think at some point 2 years ago, we extended the time period because of the number of applications. But it gets very, very hairy when you establish a procedure and then change the procedure. And I'm that's a concern to me. And so I support the resolution.
Jim?
Reluctant as I am to oppose my colleagues and their well thought out position, I'm going to oppose the motion. I think the point, not with respect to any individual, I mean, or the individual's qualifications. Sonia made the point that this is a woman and has some diversity and a qualified candidate, who some of us know. But irrespective of that, I think our job is to get the broadest list of people to this table today that we can. I think our model is the legislature. The legislature has deadlines all the time and misses them. We're a creature of the legislature, and they can't make their deadlines. I do understand that it goes something to the perhaps the weight that it's considered. And I would oppose the motion. I would accept the application, but I think it also weighs in how we evaluate the application. So my view would be that even up till 12 o'clock on the day we meet, or maybe the 8 o'clock of the day we meet, I'm willing to take the position that we want the broadest net, and we got one. And there may be circumstances, there may not. I don't want to look into the circumstances of the individual. I just say anybody, qualified or not, notified or not, we should put them on the list. So I would speak against the motion. And then, obviously, if she's there, we can all decide what impact that has on our ability to go forward. That's my position.
I would like to try to move to a vote here, but Bill?
I just want to second what Mr. Erickson said, and I think we take great effort to get as many candidates as possible. I think this looks like a qualified candidate, and I, too, would oppose for that reason. Further, I would just point out that I believe we have made exception to this rule in the past for the same reasons that have just been articulated.
Mr. Chairman, I agree. I think looking at our pool of candidates, we need somebody like Peggy Lucas in that pool of candidates to consider.
As much as I would like to not make this an issue about the candidate, unfortunately it is. I mean, this is really a procedural issue, but it directly impacts. Any other comments? Otherwise, I'd like to move to a vote.
Mr. Chair, one comment. The legislature has full ability to reach beyond the candidates that we recommend to them, correct?
Don't do that. Don't do that to us.
Yes. Senator.
Mr. Chair, I was wondering if I could make a comment that might be pertinent to the proceedings.
Please.
And I am new to all of you, and I'm new to my role. So for those of you who I haven't met, it's really an honor and a privilege to be the incoming Higher Ed Workforce Development Chair for the Minnesota Senate. And one of the things that I am most interested in is this process. Having said that, it's completely new to me. You know, Sandy Pappas had the chair for many, many years, and then this past time, Michelle Fishbach had the chair. I have been in the legislature for 8 years, but have never even served on higher ed. So I, you know, am doing my due diligence, but to be honest, I wasn't clear myself that the deadline was done. And so I, too, have been speaking to somebody that I think is an outstanding candidate and that you would all think is an outstanding candidate. And this person has shown some interest. And so I say that to you because in my first tour of the university, as I looked at the bioscience buildings, the new building that's a partnership with the Mayo that's over by the Central Corridor where they've invested in that amazing imaging equipment, as well as the new stem cell laboratory, and just saw that, in fact, we have world-class buildings that I had no idea, and I would assert that the majority of Minnesotans do not have a clue just how world-class our university has become. And so as I looked at this regent position, to me, what I was looking for was, you know, what are the kinds of, you know, strong people that could carry that message and be, you know, hit the ground running with regard to fundraising. And so with all due respect, I do intend to honor your slate and take that into full consideration to the committee, and I know that is the tradition and the working relationship, but I was prepared to ask you, would you give me just a little bit of latitude, given my newness to the position, if I were to bring forward one additional candidate for you to consider. And I assume if you vote no on this, that you would you couldn't do that either. And so, and I understand it's a bold thing in our first meeting for me to bring it forward, and I wouldn't suggest it if the person that I had in mind, and I'm not even positive I can bring it forward because I was working on it, but I wouldn't do it if I didn't think it was in the very best interest. And I'm aware that I could do it outside the process, as anybody can, only in deference to you and this process, I was prepared to come and ask that. So that's why I was asking to be called on prior to the vote, because I thought it would be awkward if you voted and then I told you that. It still might be awkward, but you'll get to know me, you know, sometimes break a few eggs to make an omelet, as they say, so I just thought I'd put it forward. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments.
Call the question, please.
Excuse me.
I am going to recognize George, and then we're going to move to vote.
Mr. Chair, if the motion fails, is the failure of the motion then that that the applications can come in, like somebody said, to 8 o'clock in the morning? Is there any guideline then for due applications due?
I think that's an excellent question, and I'll go out on a thin limb here and suggest that I would think that if an application comes in after the deadline, or if an applicant comes to us after the deadline, we need to acknowledge and accept that application. So I don't think there's an automatic pass for anyone, any application. I think a deadline is a deadline, and we need to accept anything that comes in after a deadline on a not necessarily case-by-case basis. But David, do you have a...
Well, Mr. Chair, I would say that if this motion does fail, I would endeavor to make a motion to accept this one application. I don't think that leaving the door open indefinitely is going to suit our purposes, and there are a lot of people that have, I suggest, may not have submitted their application to date because they see that the deadline has passed, and therefore we're disadvantaging those individuals. So my position would be that we consider this one application and call it a day. I don't think we can accept applications after we break as a meeting today, simply because we're not going to meet again until we actually do the interviews.
I would like to move us to a vote on this question. And Sally, help me out here to make sure I'm procedurally correct, or the question is correct. And Joanne, since you made the motion, please. The motion is... it was almost a negative motion, if I remember right. It was to deny this application.
They did not meet the deadline.
So a yes.
I don't even know who this candidate is. I'm just going by our procedures. They did not meet our deadline.
And your motion was very clear. I'm just trying to make sure it's clear to all of us as we vote. So a yes vote will be to deny the application. A no vote would be to not deny the application, which is... Mm-hmm. Probably the same as accepting it, but not necessarily.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask for a roll call vote.
Okay. Is a show of hands?
A roll call vote, the name is called, and they vote yes or no.
Okay, I'm sorry. Thank you for that, helping me out there. Okay. Sally?
Mr. Chairman, I need a clarification on the rationale for having the names associated with the vote.
I don't know that there needs to be a rationale.
If reported by hands and counting the numbers, if it's going to pass or not pass.
Excellent point, but I don't know that, procedurally, I don't know that there needs to be a reason. I think a member asked for it. And
so procedurally, with that, for Robert's rules, that automatically happens?
I don't.
Because someone has asked for the names?
That's right.
Okay.
And actually, one of our applicants, I think, is a parliamentarian.
Mm-hmm.
It's too bad that applicant isn't here. But
right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So with that, we'll begin the roll call vote. And again, a yes vote is to not accept the application, this application past the deadline date. Sally, can I ask you to call and...
We
will. You'll have to bear with me because this is our first roll call vote, so I might be jumping around alphabetically. Bill Brady?
No.
Shelley Buck?
Yes.
Sonia Carnes?
No.
Jim Erickson?
No.
Margaret Carlson?
No.
Jennifer Gudinius?
Yes.
Lois Josephson?
Yes.
Jerry Rogers?
No.
Joanne Stately?
Yes.
George Sundstrom?
Yes.
Bert Swanson?
Yes.
Dave Fisher?
Oh, no.
Harriet Porter?
Yes.
Kathy Madsen?
No.
Paul Taylor?
No.
Dan Walter?
No.
Pat Duncanson?
I'm going to abstain.
That's pretty good.
Oh boy, that was closer than I thought.
Let me just double check. So there were 9 no's and 7 yeses.
So the 9 no's would mean the motion was defeated. So we just defeated a motion that denied accepting the application. Okay? Is it by consensus? Did we then vote to accept the application?
Well, just, Dave, just for purpose of making a clear record, I would move that we accept this application. And with all deference, Jim, to you, we treat this person as a full applicant to the process that we have before us.
I would second that.
It's been moved and seconded to accept this application. George?
Mr. Chairman, what were the, excuse me, David, what were the criteria that you used for accepting the nomination or the application? I didn't hear the end of it. It's part of the motion, wasn't it?
Well,
a new motion.
I think what I will do is amend it. I think you're probably right. It's just to accept the application as laid and treat the rest as commentary. It's commentary more that we don't disadvantage this person because it was late, that we treat her as this applicant as a full applicant. But the motion is to accept the application.
Lois, are you okay with that abbreviated? You were the second, I believe.
Yep.
Okay. Are there any comments? This time we'll do a voice vote. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed say nay.
Nay.
Motion carries.
Chair?
Yes.
Maybe it's a personal request that we could get a written copy of this application.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And with that, I just need to make a comment and respond to your very appropriate comments that you made during our voting process here. Thank you. We are here to serve the state, the legislature, and the university. If you have a request for us, please don't hesitate to make a request for us, because as I said, we're here to serve the legislature and the state and the university. So with that, we welcome your comments.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, but I would like a direct response to my comment, because it's what I took from this whole discussion is that you really would prefer that I not bring you this late applicant at this time, because it is past your process, or in fact, given the circumstances and the new my newly appointed role and not really understanding this, are you open to me, you know, sharing that with you or not? But, and I'm being honest with you, I would just kind of want to get a sense of, and then I'll speak broader about things.
Well, without opening a broad board discussion, you certainly, in your role in the legislature, have the ability to take our recommendations and add to them.
Okay.
I would rather see all applicants that the legislature is going to vote on go through our process.
Me too.
Meaning go through the interview and get our recommendation and to hear the process. So if you have
if I can speak plainly.
Yep.
If you have someone that you want to put in the process, we have to listen to you.
Thank you. Okay, thank you.
No disrespect.
But yeah, no, I didn't.
Lots of work to you.
Thank you.
Harriet?
I'd like to just quickly ask a question.
Sure.
To the senator. I would not want this candidate to be disadvantaged by not having the application in front of us. We do vote on all of these applications
yep.
that we've spent hours and hours poring over. Would it be possible to get an application in?
I was trying to reach this person to find out their final decision, and if that person is going to go forward, we'll get it to you as soon as possible, of course. Mm. But you mean today.
Within the hour.
I'll do my best.
Yeah, we vote this afternoon on the slate of candidates to bring back for formal interviews.
I understand. I'll do my best.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. Well, please.
Thank you.
Yes.
So, I am very excited about this opportunity just to share with you a little bit about where I stand with regard to higher ed in Minnesota and why I requested to be the incoming higher ed chair, given I hadn't had higher ed experience, is really because when I look at our economic situation in Minnesota, when I look at our fragile beginnings of economic recovery after going through this recession, I'm more clear than ever before that what it's going to depend on in terms of long-term strength and stability is our young people and our ability to get our young people educated in a way that leads the nation. And so I had been approaching this challenge from the early childhood perspective and working so hard to make sure our 3- and 4-year-old at-risk kids were getting the kind of education that they required, and have really been a bold champion for education reform in our K-12 system, so much so that, you know, sometimes I champion things that are even unpopular, and I didn't care because I was just determined that I would stop at nothing to make sure each and every student had an excellent, outstanding education. And having said all that, I think we're at a point now where it's time to really examine what is the role of the state in making sure all of our young people have access to post-secondary. Because with our changing demographics, so many of the kids coming through the pipeline don't have the resources and the family supports required to get them not just into school but graduating. And so because of my belief that that is the number one issue, is making sure that we have a workforce that leads the nation, I, you know, asked that I take on this role. And so I'm committed both to the MNSCU system and the unique role they play in working with our business community, and then the role of the university, not just to educate our young people, but also to be the engine and the economic engine for our state. And so as I tour that new facility and those new buildings, I assume all you have already done that. Am I right? Have you all seen the new science buildings? How many of you have seen the new science buildings?
In Duluth?
Okay. And how about the stem cell lab building? How many have you? I mean, it just blows you away what we are doing. And when you listen to the success stories about the curative potential already that we have had in those facilities and the leading doctors. And so I want to be a champion and a partner to the University of Minnesota, making sure that we run that institution, you know, at the very best and highest level, but also that we attract the kind of financial support that it's going to require, because it's got to be a public-private partnership. And so I want to have our regents in particular with the kind of financial and strategic muscle that they can be drivers for our future. And as we look at new ways to govern, you know, we have to be performance-based. We have to look at how can we make sure the funding we provide is producing the kind of outcomes. So I would hope that regent candidates have that kind of thinking, that they're reform-minded, that they're understanding the the need for our citizens to believe that every dollar we invest is producing the kind of outcomes we want. So I'm hoping that the regions that you put forward come there just hungry to hit the ground running, to make the kind of changes that will ensure that we're a 21st century nimble institution. And I know that nimble and the University of Minnesota in the same breath is may sound like an oxymoron because of our size, but I believe we can do it. And so those are the kinds of forward-thinking regents that I'm hoping we put on the board. And I would like to know from you, what are your top criteria that you're looking at?
Well, thank you. We actually spent part of our committee time this morning discussing and refining and rediscussing some of those. And we heard from Regent Rick Beeson this morning as well.
Good.
So the actual written list that we prepared as far as selection criteria, thank you, Sally. You want to give one to her?
Could we share that with the Senator, please?
Bye. Certainly think so.
Yep. And just so you know, I apologize for my tardiness. I was at an orientation out in Chaska for the incoming freshmen, both House and Senators, so I had previously accepted to be on a panel, and so I came here as quickly as I could.
Well, we're glad you're able to make
Thank
it.
Thank you.
I think some of the comments that Regent Beeson made this morning for myself anyway, were helpful to me was reminding us of some experienced regents that are not only up for, retirement, if that's the right word, in 2 years. And typically we tend to, our group tends to focus on the here and now, as many humans do. And I think we were encouraged to think about the steep learning curve for regents and how long it takes a regent to get on the board and become effective, just because of the tremendous volume of things to learn, and how he encouraged us, to think 2 years from now, and who's going to start filling some of the roles that are going to be available in 2 years.
Very good. And do you have any questions of me, members of the board? I have friends and constituents sitting here on the board. It's good to see you, Paul.
Also, you too.
Thank you.
Thank you. Margaret is a one block away neighbor of mine, so you have two constituents in the audience.
Well, very good. Thank you. We're well represented, our Western suburban community.
Yes, Mark.
I appreciate your statement that you would honor the slate that goes on to the legislature. Mm-hmm. I think that is the most important thing.
Yes.
That we'll do our job to get you a pool of people, and then however those decisions are made, that there's a good enough pool over there that any decision you make will be appropriate. And the reason I say that, the Alumni Association did the homework that resulted in the Regent Candidate Advisory Council when I was CEO then. And we thought that it was important to have a process, not political game playing at the end. And so whatever happens out of this, I think we have to stand strong saying to you, it's not time to play favorites when that list goes over there.
Thank you. I appreciate that and I respect that.
Margaret, thank you for that historical. I was trying to think of how to put that in words.
Started in 87.
Lois?
I'm not 100% certain where I stand on this question that I'm going to ask myself. And we have discussed it within the RCAC on previous biennial appointment and recommendation rounds. At the present time, we do not send you ranked names. What is your preference from your recollection of having voted on regents and recommendations that have come forward? Would you prefer ranked names?
Thank you. Sandy Pappas, when she would present the candidates to us, actually would present them as though they were ranked. So it's interesting for me to learn that you didn't rank them. So somehow they did get ranked. So if you have a ranking, I would recommend that, you know, that eventually... So I see some surprises. I wasn't meaning to tell tales out of school, but I'm just telling you, people do obviously rank. You know, they have a first choice, a second choice. So if you strongly have a first choice, I think it's beneficial for you to tell us. Or if, in fact, your process means that you would think they're all equally sound, then don't rank them. So I would leave that up to you, and depending on how you feel about the slate you put forward. I assume that you don't rank them for a reason, because your tradition is that you believe it's important to give the legislature their... And by the way, we all do what we want anyway, because, you know, when the chair of higher ed would say, we think this is a really good candidate, and then we'd all go, yeah, we're going to do what we want. And each individual member does.
To the end of Senator Pappas having presented as though they were ranked, the chairs of higher ed, you will receive our votes, and from that, one could infer potentially the ranking, but it's potentially is kind of the right word. I didn't think
they did. Yeah, and Lois, I don't know that we've even provided the vote, although it is probably public record. So.
Okay. I thought we did, because I remember our discussion last time around. But
we have it every time.
Yes.
And Mr. Chair,
and we likely will again.
Yeah.
You know, Senator Pappas, in my view, did an outstanding job with this process, and really did always represent your slate. And so I say those comments in with great respect, because she really revered this process. And
thank you. And with deference to Margaret's initial comments here, as I look at our process, our role is to recruit and recommend qualified candidates to the legislature.
Okay.
I don't try to read any more into it than that, and nor has our tradition read more into it than that. Our role is to make sure that, and our hope is that the candidates that the legislature would pick would be candidates that we would recommend, because we feel that they would be qualified.
Good.
End of story. Any other questions? Senator, thank you very much.
And thank you for your service. Thank all of you for the time you put in to make sure that our university is led by outstanding regents.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Very much. I think this concludes our morning session activities. I would hope that we could break for lunch. I would suggest part of what our function and the format of today was that we would actually take a little bit of social time, and we were hoping to do that across the lunch table or whatever. The transportation building cafeteria is to the right or left. Okay, sorry, I'm backwards. So please mix and mingle during lunch, and be concise so that we can reconvene as quickly as possible. Just quickly by consensus, how does... 1 o'clock? I'd like to keep it as close as possible. So if we can make 1 o'clock work.
Can we get through all those applications between 1 and 2?
I don't know.
Okay.
Margaret, we will not leave until we're done.
Okay.
Yeah. So those of us who are looking at driving home in a little bit of snow and forgot how to do that because we haven't done it for a while.
Is there a tunnel going this way?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, follow the crowd. Okay. So with that, we will adjourn until 1 o'clock.
Yeah, Harriet, do we need to...